the Voice of Retail. I'm your host, Michael LeBlanc. This podcast is brought to you in conjunction with Retail Council of Canada. Get holiday ready with on-point insights from one of the savviest retailers operating today regarding consumer trends. Samir Kulkarni, CEO of Showcase, joins me on the podcast live from the RCC Retail Holiday Shopping Forum for an in-depth discussion on what makes Showcase different. We talk about their international expansion and how they see around corners to get social media trends onto the shelf in record time. Let's listen in now. Hello, everyone. Good afternoon, or I guess, yeah, 1:36 could still be good morning. Samir, are you with me? How are you?
I am here. Can you see me and hear me?
I can see you and hear you perfectly. There you are. How are you?
I'm doing well. I think we need to cheer up this group after all of this holiday survey data. So let's do it, Michael.
Well, I can't think of anybody better than you to bring some sunshine and light and insight into this topic. Now, as for the folks who've been listening, we're doing a survey talking about intentions. Well, it's real, right? We are early November. November's go time. So thrilled to have this opportunity to hear from you directly. What's going on? How did you plan for it? And what are your key takeaways? Let's start from the beginning. So I can't imagine many folks on this call would not know of Showcase. That being said, they may not know all the background, the scope and scale. You've had a very busy 12 to 18 months. You haven't been just buckling down and getting through the COVID era, to say the least. You haven't been doing that. And by the way, for anyone who wants to, we're going to marshal through this fairly quickly. If anybody wants a nice background on you, Samir, you were my guest on The Voice of Retail. So page back a couple of episodes and you'll find you and I did a nice in-depth interview on your background. But for now, give us an overview. Who are you? What do you do for a living? And then talk about Showcase.
Thanks, Michael. So Showcase is the home of the hottest trends. We're a mall-based specialty retailer. And I've been leading the company since the 90s. So it's really our baby here. And we're essentially a social media trend store in major malls, in a mall near you, essentially. So we've got emerging trends in all kinds of different categories. And that's one of the reasons it's more difficult to define us, because we carry the latest trends in health or beauty, but also home, toys, tech, food. And we have 109 stores across Canada. These are permanent inline stores in malls. So, for example, Toronto Eaton Centre flagship, we opened last year. We have Chinook in Calgary, Metropolis in Vancouver, so coast to coast. And then it has been a busy 12 months because we're now expanding rapidly into the U.S. We opened 10 pilot stores in the Northeast just prior to the pandemic, which was great timing. But the pandemic threw some curveballs at us, but we did successfully complete the pilot, and now we're expanding in the U.S. So we're opening 31 this year. So we should have 41 in total in the U.S. In the Northeast and Midwest. And that's supported by our distribution center just outside of Buffalo. So in total, that brings us to 150 mall stores coast to coast.
Yeah, you're a big player, and now you're a North American player. So I can't think of anybody better to give us some insights on what's happening both on both sides of the border, just because, you know, we look to the U.S. to get some trends. I want to talk to you about that, by the way, learnings there that don't apply here and vice versa. But so describe the kind of mall. You described your flagship in the Eaton Center. Do you have any standalone stores? I don't think you do. You're exclusively mall-based. Of course, you have a big e-commerce offering, but you're exclusively mall-based, right?
We're exclusively in A and B malls. That's right.
Right. And when you think about your e-commerce site, talk about that, because, you know, you're a social media trend. But before that, when I knew you back when I was at the Shopping Channel, Today's Shopping Choice, we were both in the same space. We were both still, a lot of our business was trend. So you came to that naturally, right, with the evolution of social media.
Oh, absolutely. Social media has changed the game entirely. We used to rely on television advertised products. That concept still exists today, but in various different forms. Kickstarter is the new infomercial and so on. And now social media is the new television channel. And so essentially, Michael, we're a data company at heart, and the trend business is a tricky business because it's hard to predict, obviously, and it changes quickly. And so we've essentially become a data business in our back end. In the old days, we used to go to a trade show or listen to a vendor about the latest, greatest, newest thing. Mm-hmm. It's become much more of an analytical business today, and it has been for the last 10 years or so. I'm more statistician than retailer, if you want to think of it that way. Right. And our data really splits out into the product side and the consumer side. So I can speak to that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so on the product side, you know, how do you identify the trend, right? And so we've developed proprietary algorithms over time that help us identify the emerging trends. So we're looking at dozens of data sources. Might be search, might be social, might be consumer behavior in store, on our website, and in mm-hmm. other places. And then we can glean some insights from that, not as well as Luke can at Leger, but we do our best. And then we can overlay 25 years of trend data, right? So we can look back at our library of trends over the last quarter century and say, all right, is this like a Taibo videotapes from 1998? And what are the similarities or differences that there may be? Or more recent examples, of course. So that data helps us really triangulate in on what the key trend is. And so that's why we can be first and fast. So we were, you know, the first retailer to launch the no-no hair removal system, you know, back in 2011.
I remember it was that very hot. Ray came out from Australia, didn't it?
That's right. Something like that. Exactly. And then, of course, you know, Disney Frozen, we were the home of Disney Frozen back when the movie had come out in 2014. The first retailer to launch weighted blankets in 2016. And then, you know, a recent example from 2020 is really fidget toys. So we'll talk to that when we think about holiday. But if you look at how the consumer taste changes, you know, people were tired of being locked down, tired of being having that that screen time nonstop for their kids. And so the market shifted quickly to fidget toys. So being able to identify those trends early and then become the home of those trends, that's really the key on the product side. And then, of course, a nimble supply chain so we can actually get it onto the shelf quickly. Mm. But then there's the consumer data side, and it's really being able to identify consumers and then engage with them. So we have amassed a loyalty club, which we call our insider program, of 2 million members. It's not a point system or anything too complicated. It really just helps us identify the customers so we know who they are, where they bought, when they bought, and what they bought. So we get a better idea of what bucket they might go in, and then we can cater to them in the way that they'd prefer. So what happens at the point of sale is that 80% of our transactions are happening to identified customers. So we're not really selling to the honest public. Wow. And so we know who they are. And then, of course, what we can do, you know, going back to the marketing slide we saw earlier, is, of course, email. So we send out 200 million emails a year, but we can now target those emails and personalize them.
Say that number again, 200 million.
200 million. That's right. Wow. About four million a week.
Would you describe, because you have a lot of different levers that you pull, obviously, is email at the top of that list or still close to that top of the list?
It is still close to the top of the list simply because of the size of the database. But a close second would be social media advertising. So we're one of the largest social media advertisers in Canada. And the great thing about identifying our customers is we know who they are. And so we can then target them and people like them through targeted personalized ads on social. And so, and then if you think about how it comes full circle, you then can see whether they responded to an ad and came to a store and purchased something at the till because they identify themselves when they come in as well. And so that creates that marketing loop to make sure our marketing dollars are productive. So there's a data aspect on the product side and then again on the consumer side.
You know, it's so fascinating, and I'm going to take you off, not script, so to speak, but, you know, there's been a lot of changes in privacy on the platforms, which for some would have really inhibited their ability to use the platforms in the way you're describing. But it sounds like you're an OG in terms of having that first, what we now call, what you probably have always called first party data. So you're able to connect those dots without, even within the context of the modern, you know, constraints, I guess we could say that privacy and has put on to some of the big platforms, right?
Absolutely. So privacy restrictions have increased dramatically. Basically, the large tech players aren't playing friendly with each other these days. And so a social media platform can't trace the journey of a consumer through the purchase funnel. And so a social media platform doesn't know that the consumer actually did respond to the ad and buy something.
Right.
The same thing is happening with email. email service providers are now having a harder time identifying which consumers actually opened their email. And so the old days of having different buckets of your engaged email audience and your disengaged, those are blurring.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so absolutely, Michael, you've hit the nail on the head with first party data. It's it's the absolute key. And we started on that a few years ago. But even then, we looked to the titans of retail that had built their loyalty programs and their points programs over the years. And we took a bit of a page from their book.
Interesting. Now, one last thing on the business, because I find the business so interesting. And I'm sure the listeners do too. You know, it used to be in the, whether it's the trend business or the as seen on TV business, or even in the shopping channel business, you would have a 1 in or 2 in 10 likelihood of a hit. You know what you'd see, you and I would go down to conferences and we'd see 10 items and we'd kind of make our decision based on what was happening in the States, but it wasn't 10 out of 10, right? Some would be, you thought they'd be great, but you know, this art and science you're describing of both experience and data, just generally, has that percentage gone up for you in the business as you triangulate this data and you find the very responsive social media?
Definitely, the accuracy has gone up for sure. I think that your percentage is right in terms of new product introductions. Most new products don't work, don't become massive hits, sure. Of course.
Yeah.
But our accuracy rate has improved simply because we're applying more data. There's less intuition going into it, although there's always human judgment and everything. But it's less about what vendors are pushing necessarily. Mm-hmm. And it's more about what consumers are pulling us towards. And then we take a very agnostic approach to trends. And so we don't limit ourselves to a specific category or a specific price point. We basically listen carefully to where the consumer is going and then try to keep up with them. And that's increased the accuracy quite a bit.
That's fascinating. I mean, listen, I'm glad we have 2 or 3 hours to talk today, because I just want to say, I'm kidding, everyone. Let's move on to holiday and let's talk about holiday in the context of your business, because your business is a 365 plus, you know, plus or minus business, because there's always trends happening. There's always hot items happening, you know, that are evolving. Now, how in your format, how important is the holiday season as we would describe it, you know, now through Christmas and maybe even the Boxing Day? Is gifting as important as it used to be? Is it still important? And talk about that and when the preparations for you and the team begin to get ready for a holiday.
Absolutely. So holiday, of course, is critical for us. We're the consummate gift store. And if you think about a small format store where you can, you know, get something for anyone on your list of any age, you know, gender, interests, and so on, it's a shorter list. And so we're on that list. We're happy to be there. And so November, December is critical. It's about 40% of our year.
Wow.
And so we're gearing up now for a big season. In terms of preparation, obviously that starts well in advance. Even though we're a real-time trend retailer, we are buying lots of our products earlier in the year based on data that we may already have from the past or seeing trends that are emerging. I may not have mentioned that 50% of our inventory is actually private label. So we've designed the product, in-house product developers, graphic designers, logistics, and so on. And so that cycle obviously starts earlier in the year, as early as April. But we are still buying to this day. I touched base with my team this morning and I said, quick, guys, what hot new trend can I talk about this afternoon? So it's it is something that happens on a very real-time basis, even going into Christmas. By way of example, last year, Squid Game had come out on Netflix and became the number one show by October 3rd. And so the Dalgona cookies, which is the traditional Korean cookie from that show, became super popular. So all of our month of October and November was spent trying to commercialize that trend. So these things really do come out of nowhere. But it really moves through the departments over the year. So buying is busy earlier. Logistics obviously has been crazy with supply chain challenges, you know, August to now. And then now the marketing ramps up and the store hiring and, you know, the store craziness begins as well. So, it's a year in the making, but we're hoping for a good season.
Well, let me pull on a bunch of threads out of that. So let's talk about, the immediacy of the trend. So as you said, Netflix and these streaming services, I mean, it's not the, you know, when you and I were growing up in the business, it was big releases for the holidays for movies. You knew 6 months in advance. You know, these streaming services, they're just pounding out new things, kind of like our business. You never know which ones are going to hit, which, you know, Squid Games. Who know Who knew a game about, you know, deaf games would be so popular? So does that make it more complicated, or does it actually kind of, again, just fuel this social media? Because once it comes out in Netflix or wherever, then it fuels the social media, right? Do you get some view to that, or is that, do you guys spend a lot of time watching Netflix and trying to figure that out as well?
We do spend a lot of time watching Netflix and consuming pop culture in general.
Yeah.
But I would say for Showcase, the volatility in the market or the unpredictability of the market is actually a big plus, because I would say that if a movie is coming out with a global release date, you know, 1 year from now, we offer we have very little edge over anyone else in that game. And there are other retailers who are, you know, set up to handle that type of thing and do a great job of executing on a global launch. We are focused more on the emerging trends, right? So new things that come out of nowhere that most of the sector cannot pivot quickly enough to capitalize on are our specialty. So we actually like the volatility in a way because it provides more opportunity.
So fascinating. Now let's talk about supply chain. So when I speak to retailers like yourself, most of them have said it's simmered down quite a bit. I mean, you can see the container rates, if you take one indicator, have gone down. They're almost, if not lower than 2019 levels. Is that your experience now, that supply chain isn't the craziness it has been during the COVID era?
It's certainly better than it has been. To your point, freight rates are down. We're not seeing them quite at the pre-pandemic level, but pretty close compared to 600% above pre-pandemic level we saw at peak. We're quite thankful for that. But I would say that in that sense, the supply chain is improving, but we still have significant issues. Shanghai was locked down just earlier this month. We have challenges at ports and rail terminals. So there are still issues in getting goods to market. So we're hoping that things settle down.
We're not back to normal. Like I hear still challenges and delays in the Vancouver port, even domestically, right? Moving goods from coast to coast. And
precisely. So, I think, just to take a simple example, you know, all of our goods come through Vancouver port typically. And then that was getting backlogged. And so we moved everything. We heard, well, Prince Rupert port down the coast there is free.
Right.
And so we moved everything to Prince Rupert. But of course, we weren't the only one who heard that message. And so everyone moved everything to Prince Rupert. So
like a trend on Netflix. Somebody starts it and then everybody else starts watching it.
Exactly.
And let's talk about people. So, I'm a co-author, as the members would know as well, I'm co-author of the Retail Conditions Report. And last time I spoke to members, they were saying, you know, people is now kind of more a higher profile around the boardroom table than it always has been, but more than supply chain now. So you've got lots of new stores, you got lots of stores to fill. You've got lots of technology people that you need, with such a data savvy organization. Talk about people. Are you finding it easier, better, harder, more difficult? And you've got lots of experience at this. So give us your take on finding people both in the warehouse and in technology and then on the front lines.
So certainly the labor market has been a big challenge. This year has been very, very difficult. Retention has been challenging. There's just generally has been a frenzy in the market. But I would say that things are settling down quickly. So we saw peak turnover in the retail stores this summer, but it has settled down really well. And that's in part due to some internal retention policy changes and other things to help reduce turn, but also because I think things are a little bit in flux for people. People may not be wanting to take a risk as much and may want to just sort of ride things out. And so we found that the labor market has stabilized somewhat, and we're seeing signs of that at least. But for this Christmas, we're hiring 500 people, both seasonal staff and for the new stores. But I do think that the labor market continues to be a struggle. Just a couple of weeks ago, Deanne and the RCC board went to Ottawa to talk more about this with Deputy Prime Minister Freeland and other important ministers. And really, that was our message to them, advocating for the retail sector that, look, we need help to fill vacancies, and anything the government can do to help would be much appreciated. At the same time, we're starting to see that slowdown. And largely the ministers acknowledge that, and that we should all be prepared for a significant slowdown now.
Well, it's I don't want to dwell on this because everybody's dwelling on it a little bit, what's going on at Twitter. I mean, you see even some of the folks in the Canadian office let go. I mean, this has a yin-yang effect. It's not great to be on that side, the receiving side of being let go from these tech companies. But on the other hand, there's thousands and thousands of great retail technology jobs that go unfilled, right? So maybe there's a bit of a yin and yang for us here in retail, right?
Exactly. I would say there's a balancing out for sure. I think the challenges of the last couple of years have been primarily supply side problems. The demand was there. If we could just fill the shelf, if we could just get the product, everything would be great. And really that has switched from a supply side problem, I think, to a demand side problem where people may, you know, retailers may have inventory, but people may not be as willing to purchase or may need more motivation to purchase. And so I think the nature of the problem is changing. And it's moving to a situation where we need to drive demand again. And that's where, you know, having the right product on the shelf, driving the advertising, engaging with customers is probably the key for the future.
Let's talk for a few minutes about e-commerce versus store traffic, because, you know, during the COVID era, we saw this ginormous increase in e-commerce sales. Every day was peak kind of day. But then we also, you know, in the quasi-post-COVID world, we've seen a lot of return to the malls. You're in so many malls. Give us your sense of e-commerce versus stores. I mean, I even hate to say it versus, because the two are so synchronous, both for your organization and for the business. But talk about e-commerce and talk about store traffic and stores and people coming back to the store. What do you know, we're in, as I said, we're holiday, right? So what's happening?
Sure. So e-commerce definitely spiked during the pandemic and has come back down to reality for us and for most retailers that we talk to. It's certainly down this year versus 2020 or 2021. Mm-hmm. Now, in Showcase's case, we had pivoted to become a retailer of PPE. And so our e-commerce had risen dramatically to 35% of the business. That has come back down to more historical levels, around 10%. So it's certainly slowing down. From a system standpoint, it was a great baptism by fire because we were able to put in place all kinds of systems and technology, middleware, to handle essentially what was essentially a Black Friday or Cyber Monday every day during the first few days of the pandemic. So so in that sense, it was for the best in the sense that the systems are better, but the volume definitely is down. And frankly, I'm not complaining about that because e-commerce orders are very difficult. You know, it's very hard to make money on e-commerce. I am still on the lookout for a pure play e-commerce retailer that actually makes money because the freight rates are high, especially with gas prices. The courier costs have gone up dramatically, and you've got return rate issues. People can't, you know, they're not sure exactly what they've bought. They can't try it before they buy it. Yeah. And so if that traffic and sales have gone back to the stores, we're thankful for that because the rent and labor in stores is a fixed cost that's already paid for. And so the cost of that sale actually drops quite a bit. And so we appreciate that. The other aspect of e-com is same day delivery. So we did invest heavily in last mile delivery. We did a national partnership with DoorDash to be able to deliver directly from store to customer within a couple of hours, which is pretty neat. That's a better service level than some global e-com providers. But you know, the reality is that's not a massive part of the sales. People tend to want to go to the mall and shop.
Kind of niche, right?
It's kind of niche
demand. Yeah. I mean, I could see it on the 23rd of December kind of niche demand kind of thing, right?
Exactly. So yeah, on those key days, it'll be important for those who want to avoid the crowds, but thankfully, this Black Friday will be the first real Black Friday retailers have had in Canada for some time. So hopefully we see the stores busy.
Yeah, no kidding. And you know, as I think about the two, do you do, by the way, in-store pickup for shop online in-store pickup? Do you enable that? I mean,
no, we don't really need to. Our stores are small. It's relatively straightforward to, you know, to take a product off the shelf, and we can't do curbside because we're inside the mall. But same day is the best thing we can offer right now.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about Glad before we get to some advice. I think the listeners would love to hear a bit of advice as they kind of themselves are figuring out the rest of holiday. But you know, how's the season going so far? You're on both sides of the border. You're newer in the U.S., so you would expect a different pace and uptake. You know, on the one hand, you're fresh and new. On the other hand, less experience in the market. But give us your sense of how the season is. Are people shopping earlier? Is November going to be the big month? And what's your vibe so far? You know, hearkening back to this. I love when Luke said, you know, even though we did the survey in August, it's sentiment and intent, which tends to change less. Did the survey resonate with you? And what's your vibe for how it's going so far?
Well, we're certainly seeing since Labor Day that there has been a slower start to the season. I think that people are waiting. That is the general sense I get, just anecdotally. I think that people want deals, and so they're waiting for those Black Friday deals to come out and then start shopping. I think in my sense, and there's a few differences in our case. We've really grown very much in the candy and food category, and so Halloween was a much better year than it was season than traditionally for us, simply because of assortment changes. But generally, I think there's a slower start for sure. That said, I do think that people want to have fun. They want to experience that magic, as was mentioned earlier. And so I think that for that little bit of cheer, that little bit of happiness, those affordable price points, people do go for that.
Yeah. So on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best holiday the business has ever had, let's not talk about your business. Let's talk about the industry. 1 to 10, 10 is the best the industry's seen, and one is being kind of back to lockdown COVID era ish. Where do you think the industry's gonna settle? Now I'm gonna ask that on both sides of the border, because it seems a dynamic in the U.S. at least in the media narrative is consumers are shopping earlier because they're afraid of price inflation versus holding off. I thought they'd hold off and, like you said, wait for the deals to keep coming and coming and coming. But do you have any sense on both sides of the border? Are consumers behaving a little differently, or again, do we care? Not so much, but sometimes we hear so much media from the States, it's hard to divine which might happen here. What's your perspective from a North American operator?
So I'm seeing on both sides of the border that people are waiting, and in the U.S., because Black Friday is such an institution, they are definitely waiting for the end of November. And what we're seeing in the U.S. is that most retailers are closing for U.S. Thanksgiving, which is new. And so the real shopping starts 5 a.m. on the Friday of Black Friday. Yeah. And so I think people just gear up for that and we'll get ready for that. In Canada, I think it's more of a slower build up to Black Friday because that hasn't been as big traditionally. But I would say back to your ranking of 1 to 10, I would say it's a 7. I think that it is, I think during the lockdowns, we all prayed for the time that there wouldn't be a lockdown. And we said, as long as we have that, everything else will be fine.
We'll just just let me get back to normal. Let me get back to complaining about weather.
Right. Let me open the door fully, a very simple thing. And so I think we should all be grateful for that. And I think there can still be good numbers to hit this year.
All right. Well, I'm going to put you in the cautiously optimistic category, which is a pretty broad category. But listen, it's wonderful to hear. All right. So let's close off here with some advice. With your experience with what you're experiencing today, I'm going to frame it in two starts and one stop for the retailers listening and how to handle the balance of holiday. We're early November, so it's not to get ready for the holiday, but how would you say, what are two things they need to do right away and one thing they should just leave behind?
Sure. So I would start with consumer data, and you hit on that earlier with first party data. The marketing ecosystem is changing. It's not as easy to plug and play with the major social media platforms and e-commerce platforms email service provider platforms and so on. And so first party data is the key. And so my recommendation to anyone who's not already doing it is engage directly with consumers, especially at the till.
And it's fish where the fish are, right? Like it's never too late to start, because now you get a lot of customers in the store. So if you're going to have a program, I mean, the operators are probably, holding their heads and screaming when I say that, like do something different in the stores on holiday. But
exactly.
People are there, right?
They are there, and it may slow things down at the till a little bit, but then there are workarounds and there are other things that can be done. But, loyalty programs is a good way. Discounts, contests, and giveaways is another great way to get the identity of consumers. And the point here is that it pays off for many holidays to come, right? So the 2 million insiders we amassed over many, many years. And so we heard the same challenges early on about, how do you operationally execute on that? Sure. But we're very thankful that we have that today. So it's never too early to start collecting consumer data. My second start would be to reduce inventory levels. I think that's that's a general statement that we're seeing, a sentiment that we're seeing. Essentially, the costs are dropping for replacement inventory. And so the freight rates are dropping, the input costs are dropping for sure, plastics, metals, everything seems to be falling. And so it, you may have bought inventory at a higher price. That same inventory may be much cheaper to reorder. And so getting through that earlier is probably better. I also think the market is changing, so the consumer taste will change from one category to another. So it's better to have lower inventory levels, lower risk profile, okay, and then, you know, easier to adapt. On the stop side, I have to say we need to stop thinking that today is the new normal. I think, I'm guilty of this throughout the pandemic. Mm. You know, you get to a day and you say, okay, this is the new normal. And then you realize, no, that's not the new normal, because a week later, everything's changed again. Even just in this year, to have started the year off with retail restrictions and Omicron, and then, you know, all of the craziness and the overheating of the economy, and now suddenly inflation and recession all in the same 12 months is crazy.
Yeah.
And so I would say, don't extrapolate based on today. Today is just today. And instead reevaluate daily, because the market is changing very, very fast.
Well, I think you guys were agile to begin with. I mean, you demonstrated that by bringing in one of the first retailers to bring in PPE and make that available during the COVID era. I think agility is built in your DNA, but it's so interesting to have you say we need to be even more agile, because you were agile to begin with. So that's a very important lesson. Now, I want to finish with advice for the vendors and suppliers listening, because as you know, in our community, we don't just have fellow retailers, but we have folks who have something to offer you, have something to sell, either services or perhaps good. What's your advice to them, to those folks listening, and what's the best way to approach you and do business with Showcase?
Sure. We love to talk to vendors, love to hear new ideas. We want to know what the next big thing is for sure. Chances are, if it's a trend, we're already talking, so that's even better.
Right.
But from a Showcase standpoint, you know, we have a very simple approach to our vendor relations. We don't look for credit or terms packages or complex forms or onboarding or any of that. We keep things really, really simple. And all we need is evidence of a trend, right? Independent data that helps us understand the size of the trend, the direction of the trend, and some proof of emerging popularity. So then, and if it's a product we can add some value to in terms of demonstrations, education, engagement, exposure, then all the better. We're happy to speak to vendors. So reach out to us at our website, shop@showcase.com, and we'll go from there.
And on the service side, there's probably also vendors here who would love to sell or talk to you about the services that you would consider to make the business better, more efficient, more interesting. What's their path to getting in touch with you?
Sure. Feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn, and happy to connect you with the right people on our team.
Samir, thanks so much. So gracious of you to share. It's a very busy time of the year. Thanks you so much for joining us.